Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's focus will be on how electrification and AI are reshaping energy markets around the globe. I am joined today from our partners at Brookfield by Natalie Adamate, Chief Operating Officer in Brookfield's Renewable Power and Transition Group. Natalie, thank you very much for dropping by UBS On Air Market Moves to spend some time with our listeners, our clients of UBS. Great to have you with us today.
No, thank you, Dan. We're thrilled to be here and thrilled to talk a little bit about what we are seeing in power and energy markets around the world.
Absolutely. And this theme, of course, is very much in focus of our Chief Investment Office here in UBS. So looking forward to hearing your insights today. Though before we get into the focus topic, Natalie, can you begin by providing our listeners with a bit of background about yourself and share with us your role at Brookfield?
Yeah, sure. And you mentioned it already, Dan, but to repeat it again, my name is Natalie Adamate. I'm the Chief Operating Officer in Brookfield's Renewable Power and Transition Group. And in that role, I oversee our asset management teams, which are really the teams that are focused on the strategy and the execution of the business plans of the various businesses that we have around the world in power and transition. Just in case your listeners are a little bit less familiar, our portfolio today includes about just over 40 businesses globally, and together those businesses operate over 45 gigawatts of power. And we own a development pipeline of over 200 gigawatts, which means that we're adding anywhere from 7 to 10 gigawatts a year of new power capacity.
Well, Natalie, thank you for that background. If we shift into our focus topic for today, of course, a lot happening in energy markets around the globe. From your perspective, Natalie, what are the forces driving demand at the moment?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot happening across all of the power markets where we're operating today. By far, the overarching trend, I would say, is that every nation that we are operating in needs more power and a lot more of it. And that's ultimately because energy and power is today the key to unlocking investment in all of the new industries and new economies that we're seeing develop around the world. Now, of course, AI and digitalization is one of the number one leading drivers of this new wave of demand for power. AI is driving a complete step change in data consumption, with data center power demand alone forecasted to grow from about 2% of global power consumption today to about 10% by 2030. And just keep in mind that data centers can't just be plugged in and turned on today. In a lot of the markets that we're operating in, the power supply is already pretty constrained and it's just meeting that demand. So unlocking and scaling new investments in data centers requires a net new investment in power, which is why this investment in new power sources is really being cited as the core bottleneck to any country being successful in building out an AI industry domestically. Or in markets like the US, if you want to win the AI race, you really got to invest first in power before you can invest in data center and AI compute build out. Now, AI commands the headlines, but it's also important to recognize that all of this power demand that we are seeing increase around the world, it's not just AI driven. We are seeing electrification of industrial businesses. We are seeing the onshoring of manufacturing, which is requiring new power. We are seeing electrification of the transport sector through electric vehicles. And at the pace that we're seeing, this is only increasing over the coming two decades. And that's in developed markets, but that's also in emerging markets. In emerging markets, where we have a large portion of our business as well, population growth and rising income levels further adds to that energy demand that we're seeing across all of those other sectors all of those other themes that I just mentioned. And it's all of those factors together that are combining and converging, which is really driving a huge increase in global electricity demand. Demand for the whole electricity sector is expected to double over the next 25 years, which is unprecedented compared to what we've seen in the prior few decades. And the only way to meet that new demand is going to, of course, be investing in new sources of power. So what we're seeing across the board is renewables are and are going to remain central to meeting this goal. And it's great that renewables are green, but the real reason for the popularity in increasing renewable investment is actually all economic. They're the cheapest forms of power, but it's also the technology source that can be developed and built faster than all other power sources. And just to put that into numbers, since 2009, wind costs are down 70% and solar is down 90%. And we've seen batteries now follow that same trajectory as well.
So, Natalie, focusing in on what's happening at your firm, what role does Brookfield play in meeting the growing demand for more energy?
Well, Brookfield's been invested in power and energy for over 120 years. So this is a core part of our business. Now, on one side of our business within our infrastructure group, we are focused on the assets that can transport, store, and deliver energy to the full economy. That can mean pipelines that carry natural gas and transport fuels. It can mean utility companies that are responsible for building and maintaining grids. It can mean terminals that liquefy and store natural gas for export, or it can be residential infrastructure to maintain heating systems for our residential population. Now, that's complemented by the side of the business that I focus on, which is renewable power and transition. And like I mentioned at the beginning, we've got over 45 gigawatts of operational capacity in power. That's predominantly in renewable energy and clean energy technologies. So wind, solar, hydro, nuclear, and batteries. And our business is global, meaning we have the ability to play a real material role in bringing online and investing in these new sources of power, but also acting as a critical partner to some of the largest buyers of power out there, like the large technology companies, or for governments themselves. And what our business can do is we can not only invest significant sums of capital, but we also have the pipelines, we have the land, and we have the operating expertise to bring on multiple gigawatts of new capacity online per year to meet this growing demand.
Now, to single out natural gas in particular, NatGas, Natalie, seems to play somewhat of a pivotal role in the energy mix. Can you help our listeners, our clients here at UBS, understand where it sits in the overall energy mix?
Yeah, gas is an absolutely critical fuel, whether as a, it's been a foundational part of our energy system for decades. It's also going to continue to be a critical bridging fuel to provide stability as economies undergo this decades-long transition to cleaner sources that we have ahead of us. But just to expand on that a little bit further, even in the energy systems that empower markets around the world that we see prioritize renewable development first for the economic reasons I mentioned already, you still need other power solutions to ensure that there is a continued source of power serving residents, industrials, data centers in those hours where wind isn't blowing, where the sun isn't shining, or where water isn't flowing. Basically, you need continued power reliability. And that's something that gas can provide. So let's just pick on one of those demand sources. We look at data centers again. These are assets which require what's referred to as the five nines of reliability. So you need about 99.999% uptime. That's less than 6 to 7 hours of downtime per year. And that just can't be provided by renewable energy alone. So what data centers require is combining those cheap renewable sources with other forms of power supply. And gas in a lot of markets around the world, specifically where the fuel is abundant and affordable, and they have the deep labor pools that really understand this technology, it is a natural technology to fill that role. And that means that there is going to be a long-term role for gas in a lot of markets around the world. Now, another aspect of gas is that it's also used for home heating in many parts of the Northern Hemisphere. So even in the UK, we own one of the second largest gas distribution networks. And the country today is about 85% reliant on gas for home heating. And this is in a part of the world where winters are not as cold as in North America, but still very cold. And there are alternatives available over time, including heat pumps, which other companies are addressing. But fundamentally, there's nothing that can really replace in such a large quantity the energy that gas can provide.
So, Natalie, since we're speaking about energy transition, can you unpack for our listeners where cleaner energy sits in this overall mix and how we've gotten to where we are today?
Sure. And I'll repeat myself a little bit here, but renewables, the primary benefit that renewable energies, and when I say renewable energy, I'm specifically talking about the most common technologies, which is solar and wind. What renewables plays in the overall mix is that it is the cheapest form of power that is available in most markets around the world. And more than that, it's also the fastest technology to build. So when you're thinking about the rapidly increasing power demand, and this isn't just over the next three decades, we need a significant amount of power between now and 2030. Well, renewables is the absolute fastest way to meet that. Now, renewables predominantly, when we think about net new additions, means wind and solar. But there's also other forms of clean energy that can be mixed into this, like hydro, nuclear, and batteries. And actually, in our business, and to answer your question in terms of the transition that renewables has played over time, we actually started out in hydroelectric power well before the term renewable energy was as commonplace as it is today. And the reason we invested in hydroelectric capacity was because it was mission critical, low cost. And from there, as we've seen the expansion of solar and wind supply chains and the falling costs of those technologies around the world, our renewable business expanded from being a hydro-dominant provider to adding wind and solar. And then in the last decade, it's also included batteries in a significant way. And because of the costs, renewables will always, wind and solar will always be the first to be deployed. But as we've discussed, we're seeing, just like in gas, a lot of the most sophisticated buyers of power want to see those low-cost renewables, wind and solar, coupled with other technologies. They want to see it coupled with gas, nuclear, hydro. And it's the businesses who can offer a full suite or an all-of-the-above energy solution who are going to be able to offer the best bespoke power supply solution to the customers across the globe who need the power the most. And we've seen a huge, I'd say, increasing focus on some of these other clean power technologies outside of just wind and solar, in particular in the last couple of years. Just in our business, the U.S. government actually announced that nuclear energy would be a critical part of the domestic energy solution over the next decade. And we signed an $80 billion agreement between the U.S. government and one of our businesses called Westinghouse, which is a leading supplier of nuclear technology. We also signed a 3-gigawatt framework agreement around our hydro portfolio with Google. And this is really to complement their otherwise very large purchase of wind and solar capacity that they have around the world. So significant increasing focus in clean energy more broadly outside of just the traditional wind and solar.
As our listeners know, there, of course, has been a lot of activity and change in the world, economically speaking, geopolitically speaking, in a pretty short period of time. All, of course, remains very fluid. Now, this raises the question of whether there will be any meaningful changes in energy strategy across both public or private sectors. So with that all in mind, Natalie, what's the outlook for power, broadly speaking, and renewable energy in this context?
I think we'll see a lot of the continuation of the trends we've already seen start to play out in the last 5 years. And predominantly, I'd say that focuses on two things when you think about where governments and how geopolitics is going to influence the energy sector. First, because governments want to attract these new industries of the future, and I'm specifically talking about things like AI, data center build out in country, onshore, in order to unlock that, there needs to be an investment of energy. And what we are seeing is where maybe over the last decade, there was a big focus on energy transition as a priority. Today, we're seeing that focus more towards energy addition. Now, at the end of the day, we're getting to largely the same place because what governments are prioritizing is still renewables and batteries, but the reasoning behind that has shifted. Instead of focusing on it for its net zero solution, they're focusing on it because it helps with adding power quickly and therefore attract these large critical industries of the future and to give a new economic investment in country. I think the second thing that we're seeing, and this is really a result of the changing geopolitical landscape, and in particular a focus on the trend that we like to call deglobalization, is there's an increasing focus from governments around the world on energy security. We are seeing governments increasingly prioritize the power technologies where they have a unique abundance within their own borders, as well as where it can offer economic advantages. It's why you see gas focus in the U.S., as well as an increased focus on nuclear technologies. And it's why renewables plays well almost anywhere in the world, because wind and solar resources are free, and they can be built domestically to reduce reliance on imported fossil fuels for those countries that don't have an abundance of coal, gas, or oil onshore.
So I'm curious, Natalie, how do your two parts of the business collaborate? Are there any synergies or opportunities you can create by working together?
Yeah, certainly. We're actually incredibly integrated. Our renewable power group effectively spun out from our infrastructure group when we started to see such a large and growing demand for this component of our business. So it gives us a really holistic view of the market and how we can work together with our colleagues who might have a different vantage point of the exact same sector. I would argue with this trend around digitalization that we've talked about, this collaboration is only increasing and becoming more critical. We're in our infrastructure group. We are already one of the world's largest investors in digital infrastructure assets. We own a number of data center developers across the world. And in those businesses, we're often serving the same technology customers that we would look to contract with and are contracted with across our renewables group. As we're looking to launch a dedicated, last year we actually launched a dedicated AI infrastructure strategy. We think there's at least $100 billion investment opportunity for our business in AI infrastructure alone. And our product and our strategy will be differentiated precisely because we can bring together the data center, the chips, the land, and the power all in one package for our customers. And that's really a very clear way that our businesses will work together and complement each other in a way that we can really pursue such an attractive and large-scale investment opportunity for the firm. Maybe one other final thing that we haven't talked about yet is grid. And if power is the bottleneck to unlocking new industries like AI, grid is really going to be the bottleneck to deploying vast sums of new power. We will need to see a global investment in transmission nearly double, up to $600 billion per year by 2030 alone. That's a huge amount of capital that far exceeds what private companies and governments can do alone. And there will be a lot of opportunity to either invest in or partner with utilities and grid operators. And that could be through us investing in grid reinforcement and build out through our infrastructure business, but also to come up with creative behind the meter solutions for data centers as we wait for that grid reinforcement to catch up. And I think that's just another natural intersection point between the two businesses that we have in-house within Brookfield and brings together a lot of the expertise of understanding both the utility side as well as the power side of being able to identify those attractive investment opportunities.
So, Natalie, from the sounds of this all, it sounds like we have a lot of runway ahead of us. So with that in mind, if we look at, let's say, 5 years or even a decade, what excites you the most? What are you looking forward to?
I might copy a little bit of what I've said already. I think it's going to be the large-scale partnerships. This could be in the form of the $80 billion nuclear partnership that I mentioned we signed with the U.S. government. It could be us signing large-scale renewable power framework agreements with major technology firms. It could be us entering into a capital partnership with Bloom Energy, like the one we announced last year, to scale up behind-the-meter solutions. The step change in new power that's required over the next decade, it is unlike anything we've experienced in either of our lifetimes. And the savviest and the largest buyers of that power are the ones that need to see structured bespoke partnership agreements to ensure that they get access to this valuable resource, which is power, which is going to be increasingly constrained. And if you are able to provide those bespoke partnerships, capital-funded solutions, if you are able to be a creative and a flexible partner of choice, you are going to excel and you are going to be able to unlock a huge amount of investment opportunity. And that's really where a firm like ours excels. We can be that creative and flexible partner of choice. And so I'm very excited to see how we can expand that remit of partnerships across our portfolio in the future. And I think there will be a lot more to come from even the ones we've announced already.
Well, Natalie, you've been very generous with your time, a very productive and insightful conversation today. So thank you very much for dropping by UBS On Air Market Moves to share with our listeners, our clients, how you and your colleagues over at Brookfield are thinking about how electrification and AI are reshaping energy markets around the globe. So thank you again for joining us today, Natalie. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
The views expressed are those of Brookfield. The information provided is for educational and informational purposes only and is believed to be accurate as of the date of publication. Brookfield does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information provided. The content should not be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any securities or related financial instruments. The mention of specific securities is not a recommendation or solicitation for any person to buy, sell, or hold any particular security or position.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.